Thanks for listening to The Drive with Big Al and D-Mac, on demand, brought to you by SEL Mortgage, the leaders in Colorado of special circumstance lending, helping everyone, including people with unusual financing needs. Locally owned and operated, visit myspecialmortgage.com. That's myspecialmortgage.com.
104.3 The Fan presents Big Al and D-Mac with a big story of the day.
Troy Rang, good to see you, pal. Love seeing Troy around here. Love seeing my man Chad Brown here.
What's up?
Kyle Berry with the golden headphones. Big Sexy, sitting down at the wheels of steel. I am so happy. I've been outside for the past 4 hours at Metro. There's a big baseball tournament, high school tournament going on throughout the state. In fact, Troy's team is in the same tournament we're in this week.
Yeah, you guys just did 5 minutes straight of baseball lingo. Yeah.
Well, we know not only, you know, are we friends, but it's a, you know, it's like any world. It's small. You know, you inevitably play each other. You inevitably know all the other, you know, kids, all the other coaches. It's and then it's all gone. I'm going to miss the chat when it's all gone. I'm not going to lie. You know, I got 2 more years or this year, next year, and then it's over.
One of the greatest pleasures of, you know, a sport guy is coaching your sons.
Yeah. I heard Troy talk about it. It's you're done. You know, you got through it, and your kids are both off in college, and so that's a wrap. Better have something else to talk to your wife about, which I know you do, but metaphorically, right? But I love it. My wife's into it. It's fun to talk sports, like inside baseball, real sports talk with your like wife. It's really cool. It's great having a great partner and somebody that you can share all sorts of things with, and you have sports in common. I'm lucky like that. I've got a great wife, and I know Troy does too. And I know you. Well, I think you do. I don't know how much into sports your wife is, but
yeah, I was going to ask how well. What's her level of sports knowledge?
My wife?
Yes.
Strong.
What makes it strong?
First of all, she's an athlete herself. Mm-hmm. She was recruited to play Division I field hockey at Syracuse.
Okay.
And, you know, women have just, especially this was back in the 80s, sometimes it's just different. Like the emphasis for guy. I don't know any guy who would turn down an opportunity to play their favorite sport at the Division I level in college. My wife did.
My wife!
Because she was just interested in other things. Mm-hmm. But she still went to Syracuse. She wanted to go to Syracuse. I couldn't tell you one dude ever that would do that. Can you?
No.
First of all, you got to be good enough to be able to play at that level. And then you got to get into a school that's decent. And she actually got into the school she wanted to get into. But she wanted to focus more time on her major and her studies with, you know, another part of her life than spend all the time playing the sports at the school that she wanted to go to. Like, she wasn't making any sacrifices. She wasn't like, I know a lot of guys who just, you know, kids who just make these crazy decisions to go play their sport at some ding-dong school just because it's a chance to keep playing their sport.
Right.
You know, that wasn't her case. So maybe it starts there. Maybe it starts with it keeps going because she had 2 boys. You know, it's probably got a little bit something to do with me, you know, and at the end of the day, we have a ton to talk about. She hates basketball, so that's kind of out the door. She never liked basketball. She wouldn't go to the basketball games
at Syracuse. You guys were good.
We were great. We were going to the NCAA tournament. We were a top 10 team.
Joking.
Yeah. And she didn't care. She did not care. She loves hockey. And my older son played a ton of hockey, and she loves football and loves baseball.
Without getting too personal,
yeah.
What was her family's financial situation? So to turn down a scholarship,
she was not offered a scholarship. It wasn't like that. It was, you know, not everybody gets full scholarships like football. It's more like you get a certain amount of
a partial, right?
Yeah,
1/6 of a scholarship.
It wasn't that much. It wasn't that much of a discount. Like her sophomore year, she became an RA, and she did an RA job and a work-study job. she made more money or saved herself more money doing those jobs than she ever would have got playing sports.
Okay.
So
now my daughter had volleyball offers from smaller schools, but she wanted to go to a big school, the big stadium on campus, you know, the big trees everywhere. She had no desire to go to any of these smaller schools.
Yeah. But there's a lot of kids, boys, that if they got that same offer, they'd be, here I go.
Right. Well,
off to the races.
And then the financial situation does matter. If it's a football scholarship, you get a full scholarship to go play football someplace.
Yeah, I think that's one of the misnomers for the vast majority of college sports, aside from football and basketball. There are hardly any of these sports that offer full rides. Some. Or there are percentages. Like, I think in varsity baseball in college, it's like you get 11 and a half scholarships, and you can sort of chew that up amongst the 35 kids however you see fit.
Yeah, I think we read that last week. 11.5 scholarships for 36 players.
Something like that, right?
And you can slice them up by sixth of a scholarship.
Right. So, I don't know.
Yeah. Now, for my wife, one of her favorite things to do, she claims, is for me to pause a football play when watching a game.
Yeah.
Get out the laser pointer and explain to her what's about to happen next.
Wow!
So we saw
that's a different level,
right? So this is what we've seen so far in the game, and you know, at this point we've paused five or six times. I go, okay, now here's a counter to the play we've just talked about. Let's pause it. Get out the laser pointer on the couch. I start pointing which each position is about to do, and she's like, "Wow, that's amazing!" So to give her the really coaching kind of insight.
Will she come down and say, oh, we're there in cover two or something like that? Is she at that level yet or not?
She can recognize cover one, cover two, and cover three. It's not that hard, but she's got it.
That's awesome.
She's got to jump on most football fans out
there.
That's
awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, were they in dime? I mean, you ever hear anything like that?
Sometimes she gets the lingo wrong.
Yeah.
But if I said draw up an offense,
yeah,
she could draw up all 11 players quite easily.
That's awesome.
You'd be surprised at how many football players.
Could she go all Cecil, like it's 11 personnel, it's 21 personnel, it's
you know,
all that sort of stuff?
I've given her that lingo.
The Y and the Z.
Whether that sunk in or not, I can't say. But one of my favorite things to do when I've been an intern is to get the guys up on the board. Out of the room with the position coach. Just me, the interim coach, and the guys. A little bit more casual atmosphere. Go up on the board, and you're a rookie. Draw up your college defense. And you'd be surprised how many guys put 10 guys on defense. I'm like, dude, you didn't even get the number of guys right. You are in the NFL.
Are the rest of the fellas howling at that
point?
Yes,
and the whole point of this whole thing is to show them how little they actually know about football. Your football skill on the field has gotten you to this level. But I just showed you, you know nothing about football because you can't even draw up the defense you ran for 4 years in college and get all 11 players out there.
Yep. What's the situation? Yeah, I was talking to, so I was out at Metro. My kid was playing in a doubleheader today. They got smoked in the first game. And they were playing pretty well in the second game, and I had to leave. I'm not sure how they're doing now, but they bounced back well. Now, I was talking to one of the coaches between games, and he was just a little frustrated, and he's just like, ah, man. And this team that he's coaching, my son's team, it's kind of the same thing every tournament. Like, they lay an egg in the first game, Chad, and then they play great, like, the rest of the way. I mean, you're just like, wow. But they take themselves out of tournaments sometimes because, you know, they'll lose the first game, win three games, but, you know, or win two games. I don't know, whatever it is. And, you know, you're just outside of the playoff bracket, or you're just this, or just that. So on the surface, you're like, wow, they're a really good team. And you know what it is, Chad? It's they are a good team, but they don't collectively play with a sense of urgency enough.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like one or two of kids or three or four or whoever isn't. It's like you need to all be in there. And I think I was thinking about that, the whole concept of sense of urgency. And I think it was a problem with the Broncos. Look how many games they just started out flat. And look how many games they just weren't. It wasn't like the Broncos last year were getting some leads and giving up leads, was it? It was like they were getting behind and getting more behind and getting just clobbered, right?
And the year before, they were giving up leads, fighting their way some back.
Right,
some
the 9-7 season.
They always got the slow starts in that 9-7 season. So this is not just a one-year thing. It's a progression of an attitude, of, you know, not coming up ready to play from game one.
From play one. And I was like, wow. And it's an interesting concept in sports. And if you think about the Broncos or your kids' team or whatever, they all love the sport. I'm not questioning their heart or desire to play the sport. I think all the, you know, Broncos players love football. I believe that. So if they all love football, why wouldn't you have that sense of urgency right from the get-go? You know, where is the psychology in there?
The psychology
that is holding you back
is this. We all want to win on Sunday. Do you have the will to prepare to win throughout the week? It's hard to flip the switch on Sunday. If you've been preparing to win all week, it's natural for you. You're ready to go. I was juiced up for 9-on-7 on Wednesday. I was juiced up for third down pass on Thursday. I was juiced up when we did that team period on Friday. And on Saturday at the walkthrough, I was juiced up then, but, you know, it was a walkthrough, so I couldn't go very hard. So I've prepared myself for that moment on Sunday. It's not a switch you can flip on and off. It's got to be flipped on, and it has to stay on.
It's funny you say that, because when I was talking to the coach between games, what I said was, well, listen. I said, listen, you know, Farby, I'm just a dad here in this situation, but, you know, I've coached. And what I said to him is, I think you just got to instill this in practice more and have a practice. And when you have a practice, here's what I always loved about coaches that really don't know what they're doing. Sometimes you could really tell coaches who don't know what they're doing because they're just going ballistic all the time. And they are just, especially on games.
Yelling's not coaching.
Yeah. So when I see a coach just going nuts during a game, the only thing I can think of is this guy's playing catch up. Like, for what, unless he's just a nut, right? Like, there's a screw loose. Other than that, he's just so frustrated because nobody's doing what he wants them to do. And all I can think is, well, first of all, maybe your players aren't as good. And second of all, you didn't prepare them the right way. And if all you're doing is screaming at them all the time, you're screaming at them in practice, you're screaming at them in the meetings, you're screaming at them during the game, if it's nothing but screaming, then that's all white noise. I firmly believe that.
Oh, kids and players, grown men, block that out. You're not having a conversation with me. You're not coaching me. You're just yelling at me.
When the dial's always on 11, that doesn't work.
No.
But here's what I saw that really worked.
And whispering works.
I learned this from, well, I'm going to say this. Sometimes I'm going to say the range of emotion as you're coaching, I think, is much more effective.
True.
Like if you're always, so let's take it the opposite. You're a quiet coach.
No.
You don't raise your voice.
No.
Ever.
Nope.
So, you know, you're not yelling during games like nobody's thinking you're a lunatic, but you don't have a sense of urgency, period. And you can't be a sports whisperer and then grab the team after the game and tell them that, you know, hey, you guys let me down or you let yourselves down or you didn't play with a sense of urgency when you yourself don't have it. What I find is you've got to find that medium. I had a great coach. I had two great coaches in high school. I was very lucky. I had a soccer coach and a baseball coach, and they were kind of the same. The baseball coach was a little bit more stern. But all the tough stuff would happen during practice. Like all the, and it was a sense of urgency. But deeper in the season, when everybody was a little bit more tired, you know, my soccer coach would say, hey, let's all just chill out and relax. We played a game yesterday, that sort of thing. But boy, did we just start intense, more or less right from the get-go. But it was every practice, every game, every sort of thing. And so when he got in your face, it meant something. Because he normally wouldn't, he would be enthusiastic without being loud, but when he got loud, it was really justified and it had an impact. So I think of like Bill Kolar and Reggie Herring. I mean, I roll my eyes at guys like that because they're just constantly screaming, Chad.
It does nobody any good. Some of the best moments for me as a coach is when some critical moment in the game, some incredibly pressure-packed moment to get all the kids close to me, whisper to them. You're loud enough so they can hear you. It's not truly whispering, but you softened your voice where they are forced to dial in and pay attention to every word you're saying. If you're up there, oh my God, it's a huge moment, guys. We got to get ready. There's nothing to digest there.
But it's got to be different at the professional level, though. How do you do it? How do you do it at the professional level, though? How do you create that sense of urgency, that desire to come out strong? How do you do that at the professional level?
I think the range of emotions that you've talked about is key. And you can't be fully amped up. You can't be, 100 every day all the time. There's got to be times where it ramps down. There's got to be times where it ramps up. But I thought Bill Cowher, of all the coaches I've had, was the best at setting the emotional tone throughout the week. So on that Monday meeting, he would review the game tape. And that was all about review. But Wednesday, when we came in to start game planning for that particular week, he would introduce the team, their players, blah, 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 blah. And he would talk about what we were going to do. Then on Thursday, he would reinforce that message and add a little bit more detail to it. By Friday, the message was clear what the game plan was going to be, what was expected of all of us.
Right.
So by Saturday night at the hotel, you were emotionally prepared. I've worked out all offseason. My body's in great shape. I've paid attention all during this week. I know exactly what's being asked of me. I know exactly what my opponent is going to do.
Mm-hmm.
We have a plan as a team, not just defensively or offensively, but offensively and defensively.
Mm-hmm.
I could not go on the field more prepared to let it go.
So what were you thinking last year when you heard Vance talk about how great Wednesday practices were all the time?
Okay. Obviously, the people who listen to this station know my admiration for Bill Belichick. And Bill does a couple of things with the media. He never criticizes a player publicly. Never. All that stuff happens behind the scenes. But also, he doesn't get into the details of how practice was. And if it was a bad game, hey, we got to go back to the drawing board. We all got to coach better. We got to play better, blah, 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 blah. But he's not going to give away those details because in the end, they make you look foolish. You talk about Wednesday practice, then people start dismissing practice because you don't play well in the games.
Right.
It just creates a weird disconnect because, well, practice was so great, but the game, you lost by 30.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing, coach?
Mm-hmm.
How is that possible that your practice is so great, but your game isn't so great?
Right. It felt like that last year. Like, hey, at least we won Wednesday.
Right. And then to not recognize that you said this several weeks in a row.
Yeah.
Or in an 8-week span where things weren't going so great. You said like 6 of the 8 weeks. And I may be inflating those numbers.
Right.
But it was enough
that's
to
what
where
it, felt like.
It was disturbing to listen to. And maybe it was nerves. Maybe it was just the cliches coming out. But you got to understand the message that you give the media also ends up being a message you send your team. And if Wednesday's practice was that great, it's got to have an effect on Sunday. So apparently it's not really that great.
Yeah, it is funny because whatever you're saying to the media, the players all have friends, family members, social media, right?
Right.
Like, hey, heard you had a great practice. Or what happened to that great practice? Or it is interesting. The message the coach sends out to the players may come back to the players in a different way. It may come back to the players not through their direct consumption. It's not like the players are hopping in a car and they're listening to me and Al on the way home, that sort of thing every day. I don't assume that.
I've never been in an NFL locker room where the sports page is not littered all over the locker room every single day.
Yeah. Well, now, of course not.
It's still there.
Sports page, like a newspaper, please. Did you hear about the Denver Post, by the way, really quick? Wanting to charge people roughly over $500 a year just to read them online?
Yeah.
Dude, as if you could become more irrelevant, Denver Post. Congratulations. You've sunk truly into the depth and depths of...
The dips?
The dips and the depths.
The dips without a TF?
Of misery.
TH?
Dilly dips. Dilly. Dilly dilly, Denver Post. Way to go. Yeah, sense of urgency. I'm not even going to cite the Broncos. The one setup I saw that I knew things were haywire in terms of preparation was the John Embry year coaching CU with, oh my gosh, running back, help me out.
Eric Bieniemy. Who is on the fast track to being an NFL head coach.
I hope so. He's a nice dude. Every interaction I've had with him has been positive.
First year as an OC in Kansas City.
But it was insane going to a CU game and seeing how unorganized they were. I mean, John probably deserved at least one more year. I'll tell you that, because I don't know really what you're supposed to do in one year. But that being said, that was I don't know what the plan was there. I mean, it was bad.
When you run the sneak on first and 10 because you thought it was still fourth down, the chains
and the enemy was
not moved.
The enemy was like, I thought he was going to just explode. Well, that dude is, woo. I don't know how he is as a position coach, but he was struggling as an OC.
When you come from the NFL and used to such high-level players in your time at CU and your time at UCLA, you coached Chris Brown, you coached Maurice Jones-Drew, and you're used to a certain level of players. CU was at an all-time low as far as talent level. And then you guys came in and you decided you're going to run a pro-style attack, which requires like Alabama kind of talent to win in college football today if you're going to run a pro-style attack.
Not a great plan.
And you as a coach are always turned up to 11.
Right. Sort of that while, same sort of thing, right? Kids are tuning you out.
They're going to tune you out. And at one point, I had to pull EB aside and say, hey, man, this ain't the NFL.
Right.
You can't bring in 35 new guys next year. This kid's going to be here next year.
Right.
So the 10th time you dog cuss him, he may just be like, man,
right,
I ain't listening to coach no more.
Right.
And then
you're gone.
Then you're done.
Right.
He can't help you and you can't help him.
Right. So you need a flow. Feel the flow. Feel the flow, Happy. You need a flow. You need to establish a way you're... This is my whole thing with the Broncos. You need a plan and stick to the plan. And last year, too often, Chad, what was the plan? I mean, clearly, there wasn't a consistent one because you fired Mike McCoy in the middle of the season.
Well, again, going back to my Bill Cowher example, every week we all knew what the plan was.
Yeah,
it was built within the team during the week.
Yeah. I don't know what the plan was last year. And I would challenge the players to actually explain what the plan was.
And seriously, each week he would build it up. So by Saturday, we all could recite what the plan is. We're going to run the ball right at their ends because their ends aren't very good at left tackle plays. We're going to throw on third and long, and we're going to go target this particular guy. And defensively, we're going to stop the run on first and second down. They've got a rookie quarterback. We'll press him with zone blitz. Yeah. We all knew what the game plan was when we showed up on Sunday.
So be organized. Have a plan.
Communicate the plan.
Communicate the plan.
So you can get buy-in. And if it's a mystery to you, it's going to be a mystery to the players as well.
If you train the right way and you have all these things, you can create a natural sense of urgency to execute.
Right.
Without that, you're going to be looking around the sidelines like, this is happening way too fast. And that's what it looked like last year.
Well,
there was no sense of urgency because nobody knew what the plan was. And, you know, you can just start at the very beginning with the quarterback situation. I mean, talk about hindsight being 2020. Whatever you were going to do last year, no matter what, you should have declared who the starter was at the beginning of training camp. Right?
It certainly would have helped things.
Quarterback controversies in training camp do not work. Don't work. And you just got to make your minds up. So, whether it's... Now, you got to go easy on little kids, you know. We're talking about upper-level sports, right, Chad? We're not talking about, you know, screaming and yelling at 10-year-olds. You know, somebody's got to bring the orange slices and get ice cream afterwards.
No, I can't expect you to be a great football player or a great basketball player, but I can expect you to give great effort.
You can try.
And as a coach.
Right, right.
And as a coach, that's where 90% of my yelling is going to come is if we are not giving great effort.
Right.
You drop a pass, yelling at you is not going to make you a better pass catcher.
So one thing to do probably we should all do is, you know, if you're in charge of anybody, like say you're just a manager or you're the virtual coach, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, whatever you're doing, you know, you're a leader. Look at yourself first. Are you developing or executing a plan? And are you passing it down so you can create that sense of urgency so when it's time to execute, whether it's a meeting or a presentation, a sales call, or this radio show, or a sports team, that you've done what it takes to not turn the switch, but just get there.
One more Bill Cowher quote.
All right.
After every loss, he would give his little speech and he would say, I'm going to go home and I'm going to look in the mirror for a while.
Mm.
And I just, as a player.
Did you believe him?
Yeah, I believed him and I loved it. And it became so much more clear when I went to Seattle. And Mike Holmgren would say, we as coaches are doing everything we can do. You guys got to do better. And I thought, that's not how this whole thing works, man. That's not how it works.
All right, Danica Patrick on the ESPYs. Carmelo Anthony, his travel plans are getting set. The big three's next.
Sandy Clef here to tell you about SCL Mortgage, special circumstance lending, locally owned and operated. And if you're self-employed or work on commission, this is the place for you. Bank statement loans are back. You don't need tax returns to do your loan. In some cases, the bank statement loans can be done with credit scores in the low 600s. MySpecialMortgage.com on the web. 303-790-2222, the phone number. SCL Mortgage, licensed by the Colorado Department of Regulatory Agencies, number 1200716.
It's Big Al and D-Mac with the Big Three, presented by Sam's Number 3 Diner and Bar.
Well, let's hit you with this breaking news. Oklahoma City has agreed to trade Carmelo Anthony and a protected 2022 first-round pick to Atlanta for point guard Dennis Schroeder. And Schroeder? That's what I said. I said Schroeder.
You did. There's no you.
Okay. Dennis and Mike Muscala. So Carmelo's going to be waived and then join the team of his choice. So it is a salary dump to Atlanta, but Melo will never play for Atlanta. He will be a free agent. Wow. I'll ask it again. Would you want to see Carmelo? I'm seeing here Rockets are the front runner, but would you want to see Carmelo Anthony with the Nuggets?
No.
We're not going to have Michael Porter Jr. this year. Probably not. Would you like to see 1 year with Carmelo?
No, not at all.
Big Sexy.
No.
Oklahoma City.
Sign me up.
In Vegas, Oklahoma City's odds for the championship went up after this deal.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think would he re-sign with Oklahoma City just for a smaller deal? Yes? No? No?
No,
probably not.
I think that's done there.
All right.
He's unwilling to accept the six-man role. And if you think of yourself as a starter and you're not a starter, what team really is going to want you?
Well, maybe the Rockets.
Yeah.
That's what's going on, Bongos.
Three!
The NFLPA released their top 50 NFL player sales for March, April, and May. Going to run down the top 10 for you real quick. Any surprises? Nick Foles, number one. Tom Brady, number two. Carson Wentz, number three. Saquon Barkley, number four.
Wait, what is this list again? Say it again.
This is player sales. The NFLPA.
Player sales, what, jerseys?
Jerseys.
Oh, okay. Jerseys.
All right, paraphernalia.
Say it again. So who's number one, Nick Foles?
Nick Foles, number one.
Okay, Tom Brady,
two. Yep. Carson Wentz, three. Saquon Barkley, four.
Yeah.
Dak Prescott, five. Aaron Rodgers, six. Ezekiel Elliott, seven.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy Garoppolo, eight. Beckham, nine. And Derek Carr, 10.
Okay. No, there's no surprises on that list for me.
None at all. Von Miller, the only Bronco. Where do you think he was on that list?
Ah, well, I'm looking at it, so I know. But I know he was number 21.
You
but
cheated.
Yeah, I definitely cheated. I wouldn't have guessed that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's kind of where that's the reality of the situation for the Broncos. As big of a star as we view Von Miller as, and as popular and as respected as he is within his peers in the league, the real truth of the matter is, in terms of just the top superstars, Von's just not quite there. And he's way up there. I mean, he's at the ESPYs. He's got his Old Spice commercials. He's, you know, he's Von.
Well, he's the first defensive player on this list.
Yeah, it's tough. Really? He's ahead of J.J. Watt? Really? That's interesting.
J.J. Watt's 27. Khalil Mack is 22.
Huh?
The biggest surprise for me is number 14, Jason Witten, still in there despite retiring.
Right. I think it goes to, don't be surprised this year if there's not a whole lot of national attention on the Broncos. There's just not, it's not the same that it used to be. If we wanted a lot of national attention, if we wanted a lot of eyeballs on us, we would have Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, Sam Darnold, or Baker Mayfield, Chad. That is the truth of the matter.
Mm-hmm.
And we just don't. And as chub, all day, all night. But nobody's really expecting anything less than a really good season out of Bradley Chubb. But look at that list. Von Miller is as big as it gets, and he's number 21, right? So, and meanwhile, you have offensive guys who have never played in the NFL who are in the top 10 or have barely played in the top. It's just a peek into reality. Bongos.
Three!
Danica Pat. What's that? Danica, yeah, Danica Patrick. How did Danica Patrick do?
Speaking of other countries, congratulations to France on winning the World Cup. I'd make a joke about the U.S. soccer team, but they didn't qualify for this monologue.
We'll go through a more of her jokes later, but overall, what'd you think?
Not everybody is cut out to be a host. I think she can be a great spokesperson, a great salesperson using for commercials, but the hosting ability to get the crowd to buy into you and buy into your jokes, not everyone has that ability. She's got some work to do.
Yeah, I think she was fine.
She was awful.
She's a pro athlete. She was a little self-deprecating, and she used Aaron Rodgers as a foil here and there. She was fine, but she is not a professional comedian. If you want a professional comedian, hire a professional comedian. It makes a difference if you care about that sort of stuff. Bongos.
Three.
Michael Porter Jr. talked about him when we talked about Carmella with the first Big Three story. Lumbar spine surgery with no timetable to return. They finally announced that it was lumbar spine surgery. Does this surprise you so soon after the draft?
No. I think everybody knew what was going on, and I'm not all that worried about it. I think it's cool. It's all good as far as I'm concerned. You?
I wonder if this was somehow kept from other teams, but there's a reason why he slid to the 14th pick in the draft. I think it was well known, his issues. I'm not surprised, but again, I think this speaks to Nuggets, the riskiness of this pick, either it's a huge win or it's a huge fail.
Now, Chad, hold on really quick before we go. Have you had a teammate that has had lumbar spine surgery before?
Yeah.
How long was their recovery?
Over a year before they were fully recovered.
I mean, basketball and football are two different sports. So, I mean, I guess we could be looking at an entire season.
Maybe.
So, is it a complete fallacy that we're hoping Michael Porter Jr. Is not, quote, expected to miss the entire season?
I mean, whatever. If he plays a couple games in March, perhaps that's okay. But it's cool. I think I'm fine with it.
I'm fine.
Yeah.
Keep him on the shelf.
Yeah. Ben, it worked for Ben Simmons okay, right? So patience, and we'll all be okay.
Three!
Coming up, Rob Manfred doing some interesting interviews in terms of the state of Major League Baseball. Danny Amendola with interesting words for Bill Belichick. And is there a controversy with the flag and the anthem brewing in Miami? Last year we had a great turnout during training camp for our free t-shirt giveaways. We're doing it again. This is going to be huge. I know what the shirts are going to be. You're going to love them. Listen to Schlereth and Evans Monday morning at 7:45 for pickup details. It's The Drive.
It's The Drive with Big Al and D-Mac on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Give it up for the U.S. men's curling team. They also took home gold. And for those unfamiliar, curling is the sport where you are allowed to kneel. Totally encouraged.
I broke apart my insides. I've got no soul to tell.
I thought we were done with this, Chad.
I told you everyone.
Demonstration. Well,
help me get away from
the question was, will teams establish their own policies to punish the players if they violate the anthem? The Broncos came out and said, no, we will not do that. And there were other teams very quickly, the Jets and the Niners, who also said, no, we will not have a team policy. Well, here you go, Miami Dolphins. The first team I know of to institute what they call proper anthem conduct. It's one sentence in a 9-page discipline document provided to the AP by a person familiar with the policy who was anonymous. It's not a public document, but it's like, what you get at your workplace, right? Like code of conduct.
Mm-hmm.
Who doesn't have a code of conduct at work, right?
Correct.
It classifies anthem protests under a large list of, quote, conduct detrimental to the club. all of which could lead to a paid or unpaid suspension, a fine, or both. So as far as I understand, the Dolphins are the first team to at least put in a handbook, as far as I know, an additional punishment to their players for protesting during the anthem.
They would be the only team who has said they would actually suspend players for violating the anthem policy.
Mm-mm-mm.
And then to further on that story, we talked yesterday about Tennessee Titans defensive tackle Jarrell Casey and him saying, you know, I'm going to be willing to take a fine to continue his protest. Steve Underwood, team president for the Titans, says he thinks head coach Mike Vrabel and general manager John Robinson will be interested in having a conversation with Jarrell. So, you know, it's just this is going to get muddier before it gets clear. It's clear.
Here's Casey said.
I'm gonna take a fine this year. Why not? I'm gonna protest during the flag. That's what I'm gonna say now. I'm gonna take my fine. So it is what it is. I ain't gonna let them stop me doing what I want to do. And if they want to have these battles between players and organization, it's what it's gonna be.
Well, he doesn't really quite understand the rules now. Unless the Titans have their own policy, which apparently the Dolphins do, and maybe the Titans do, and then he would understand the rules. But it seems to me he doesn't quite understand what would be happening.
And Steve Underwood, team president for the Titans, talks about that. We're not exactly sure why he's suggesting that he would, as he put it, take his fine.
Right.
Because there would be no fines levied against him.
Right, right. He doesn't sound like he understands really what the rules are.
Which doesn't help now you in your protest to make yourself sound credible.
Right. You need to understand what you're doing.
Right.
They're not going to stop me from doing what I want to do. Well, correct. They're going to fine your team. And then the Titans will have to figure things out. There are teams that have said, you know, whatever. So when he says take your fine, well, I mean, unless you, out of your own sense of goodwill, want to write a check and pay back the Titans, you won't have to, you can do whatever you want.
Now, you talked about, you know, teams having various stances on this.
Yeah.
Dolphins owner Stephen Ross at one point firmly supported his players in the right to protest.
Yeah, I'm curious what changed there in Miami. Why?
He thought the political uproar obscured the reasons for the protest. So the fact that he was okay with the protest, and then there was an uproar, and he thought, oh, well, then now the protest isn't leading the controversy.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the uproar against the protest that's leading the controversy. So he now has pushed back, and as the owner, I'm sure he had to approve this 9-page document with this policy regarding fines and suspensions for violating the anthem policy.
Here's more from Casey.
Because it's not necessarily about the anthem. That's where everybody's messing up at. It's not about the anthem. We're just using that time to use it for our platform. If everybody can understand where we come from, about the injustice in America, the way that the justice system treats minorities is the issue that we have. And until they can understand that, and for an organization, you know, for 95% of your team to be minorities, and you can't understand where we come from, that's pretty mind-shocking to me.
Yeah. Yeah, he doesn't really understand what he's doing, but whatever. What are we supposed to do with this, Chad? You know, it's like it's not really about the anthem, but this is just the time that we choose to do it. It's really, really, really naive of players to say something like that. I mean, it's borderline. I'm not calling them morons, but the statement is moronic because it is a complete disregard for the perception that people could think that you're protesting the anthem. It is beyond reasonable that people may think you are literally protesting the anthem when you're doing something during the anthem. I mean, that is just logic, common sense. If you want to say we're doing this and we understand how it may be perceived, but we also understand it's a touch point moment that's going to draw the most attention to it. Okay, I can sort of respect that sort of point of view. But when you want everybody to sort of think, oh, I see. Even though that's happening during the anthem, it's not about the anthem. It's about all this other stuff. And this is where this protest to me, Chad, got bizarrely confused in the first place. Because nobody's for injustice. and police brutality and all that. I think everybody can recognize that's an issue, a serious issue.
I think that's an overstep in your wording there, but go on.
That being said, he doesn't understand what the real rules are. That's just not the guy I want to be my spokesman for this particular movement, whatever's going on. I mean, he's not my guy who I want to be the lead voice on this. Because I don't know if he understands what's really going on.
Gosh, there has got to be a way where the players can begin to have some conversations internally, organize themselves.
Yeah, that is a big problem.
Then team up with the PA and
right.
then go to the ownership and go to the NFL and say, okay, we recognize this has gotten so muddied.
Right.
We still want our right to protest. We
right.
still want to
right.
be able to articulate our concerns about social justice in America. But due to a million different factors, all that has gotten lost.
And
why don't we all come together and
yeah.
support this cause and this cause publicly?
Well said.
And say we are going to direct our energies in that way. No one wants their ability to be an American in protest silenced. And there's a certain percentage of players who are just pushing back because they are being pushed back against themselves. And in the midst of that, we have lost the original purpose of this.
At the end of the day, I put the blame on Roger Goodell and the NFL because even though I'm not really on the same side with Casey here because I see too many flaws with what he's saying, I agree with you. It's too muddy. And you just went right around the NFLPA to shove this through way too fast. And you should have taken your time with it, worked together with the players, and even if it was a little sticky for a year or two, you should have hashed it all out. So you're all on the same side when in 2020 the CBA gets renewed again, and then you can together move forward on this particular issue. Would have made much more sense. But no, the NFL felt this need to push things through. Ultimately, they're going to get their way. You're going to get some players who just kind of, they have good intentions, but they don't quite understand everything that's going on. And you're just going to go back into this mass sense of confusion again if this starts happening. And now you have NFL teams who have their own rules. Some have rules that go this way. The Dolphins have rules that go another way.
Yeah, Jets ownership said they would pay the players fines. Again, the players aren't going to be fined. The
players
teams
aren't
going to
be
fined.
And somehow it was pretty clear when it came out. Nobody was really paying attention to it. So we are going to have a mess on opening night. And I understand people who are going to be upset at players. I understand players who are going to be upset that they feel like they're being restricted. And I would just urge everybody, when everybody's getting upset with everybody else, to thank Roger Goodell and the NFL owners for not working with their workers. I want everybody just to take a deep breath and realize this probably could have been taken care of had management worked with the players.
True.
And they didn't.
They did not.
And so
they were
here we go.
To appease one person at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. In the end, he's still going to say what he wants to say, and now you've alienated the players.
Oh, and by the way, the whatever you did to try to, you know, salvage, it wasn't enough.
No, it's never going to be enough for that guy.
No.
He's going to continue to use this for his own political purposes.
And he's using you completely.
Yeah. Can we go bongos on that one then? So we can say it's done?
Yeah, I don't even want to. It sickens me. It's the divisive nature that it's everything that just is that stinks about, you know, the reasons we really want to watch sports. But it becomes a big news story. Let's talk about Danny Amendola talking crap about Bill Belichick. That'll clear the palate. Football at 4 is next.